Welcome to the Single Wives Podcast, a place to explore ways to both survive and thrive.
I'm Terry.
And I'm Wendy.
And we'll be your hosts. So let's get this conversation going.
Triggers would be a really good place to jump in if we could. How they show up, how to manage them, I think are the two big questions.
Sure. So I would say on a very general kind of way, triggers are things that come up that dysregulate you emotionally, oftentimes unexpected, and most of the time due to some sort of, you know, incident or feeling about something related to a past experience. So for instance, if I'm outside at the grocery store and I've had a great day and I'm totally emotionally regulated, nothing's wrong, I'm not tired, I'm not aggravated, I'm not depressed, anything like that. But then I hear a really loud bang behind me. That can be really dysregulating. And I could be kind of more hyper aware or anxious after that for the rest of the day and not really know that it was because of this loud bang that happened behind me, but now I'm just more irritable and trying to focus on my surrounding more. And that has to do with, you know, previously having loud noises in my past and those disturbing me or putting me on high alert type thing. So that's kind of a general of what I think about triggers. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think they're related to woundings or difficult experiences, particularly of the past. Mm-hmm. Often they go back to childhood, but not always. And I think they really affect our relationship without our knowing it. Like we're just suddenly in a fight or a complete shutdown and don't know why. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, if we knew our triggers better, mm-hmm. right, it would be very helpful. But how do you come to know your triggers?
Yeah, it's tough. It's interesting because my husband and I were having a conversation the other day about politics, and he's great in the way that he talks and it's very unemotional, but he's very intelligent and very well informed. And so as he was talking, I was finding myself more and more irritable and I couldn't figure out why am I getting like angry about this? Like his approach to this is just fine. He's hearing me out. I'm hearing him out. Like it's fine. And I remembered, you know, I'm feeling irritable because I'm feeling stupid. I'm feeling uninformed. And that's a big trigger for me to feel stupid. That has something to do with my past. And so I realized like, oh, that's what's happening here. And that's not what this person is projecting onto me. That's my own hurt. And that's my own, you know, response to this situation. And so I was able to, you know, pull myself out of it. Eventually had to walk away from the conversation because it was too tough to do in the moment. But it can be something as simple as that, that you don't realize like, man, I'm getting worked up about this. And this other person is totally being fine, but like, I'm mad at them, right? And speaking from a relational sense, you know, I think triggers particularly are not just, you know, something that's happened in your past or whatever. I think it is a wounding that really impacted you. And maybe you've done some work with it, but most of the time it's this thing that's unresolved. It's this thing that still has a lot of emotion tied to it or a lot of memory tied to it that hasn't been dealt with. And so me in that moment, I was able to identify eventually like what I was feeling because I've done a lot of work with that. But still probably have some work to do with that. And that, like, I was so dysregulated, eventually I had to walk away from the conversation.
So there are really two sides to this in a relationship. There's my triggers there, and then there's his triggers. Mm-hmm. We start with my triggers, right? I don't even know the question. How do you approach them? How do you work on them, as you said?
As a couple or as an individual, do you mean?
As an individual, as the wife, right? Yeah. Realize you've got triggers. What do I do about that?
I think the first thing is like we want to empower people to understand that you can have some responsibility over your emotions. You can have some control. You want to be in control of your emotions, right? And so the biggest thing to empower somebody with that is let's work on identifying it. Let's identify what these triggers are. And it's as simple as like, let's keep a log. When you get irritable, when you get super anxious, when you get super depressed, like what is happening around you that may potentially be causing that? And at first it's going to be really, really hard because you can't identify the thing that's causing that. So we start really broad of like, I was eating dinner and we were talking about this. And then all of a sudden I felt this. And then we try, you know, you and somebody who's trained most likely will work through what that could potentially be. Because we don't want to create, you know, we don't want to overgeneralize this word triggers. We don't want to be so sensitive to the world that we can't have a conversation with anybody. And we create all these boundaries of you're not allowed to say this to me and you're not allowed to do that. We want to identify what's the piece here that hurt me? Is that about me? Is that about the other person? What's my control with that? And it does start with the identification, because if I just, you know, get angry with my husband, oh man, yeah, just always angry with him when he talks about politics, I have a boundary. Like, I'm not going to talk about politics with him at all. Wait a second. Maybe that has more to do with you than it has to do with this other individual. So identify what's really going on and what's caused that trigger for you. So not just, yeah, I don't like being called stupid. Okay, why don't you like being called stupid? Really go to the root of that and where the hurt in that is and start to work through that.
So even as simple as noticing what's going on in your body at the time.
Yeah.
Like, I feel this in my chest. I feel sick to my stomach, or I just feel so stressed or anxious that I feel like I'm going to explode.
Mm-hmm.
Note of those things as well as you can, jotting those down in the log so you can, you know, have more information to take to your therapist to work on the triggers, right?
Yeah. And it's important to know, you know, we have three main houses of memory. So we have somatic, we have, which is your body. We have cognitive, which is the actual memory that you recall, right? And you have emotional. So you have emotional, cognitive, and somatic. And you're trying to really work out where you're feeling disrupted with all three of those things. Because the key is to get all three of those things back in a healthy spot to find healing for all three of those things. So body scans are awesome. And I love when people are, you know, they're talking about a story or they're relaying something that was difficult for them and just checking in with them, like you said, like, where are you feeling that? Yeah, you know, I feel tightness in my shoulders. Okay. I want you to be more aware of when you're feeling that throughout the day and aware of the situation around you that may be potentially contributing to that. Like, that's going to help you further identify that trigger and how your body responds to that. I feel nauseous. I start developing a headache. I feel like I want to pick at my skin. Those kinds of things is your body's way of talking to you about something that it recalls.
So when we're triggered, it's really those three areas happening separately. Like, we get very emotional, or our body is feeling things. I mean, it may be together, but it's not integrated in a healthy way.
Right. And that's the word. That's the word, integrated. That's what we're trying to get to, is if I'm just going to talk about this from a cognitive perspective, yeah, okay, I can talk about, you know, that time that I was raped and there's no emotion behind it and there's no connection behind it, but I could talk about it. It's fine, right? But if I allow myself to integrate with my somatic responses to that and my emotional responses to that and my cognitive recall of that, that's where we're going to start to make some progress, is that integrative process. So having it fragmented, we see this with trauma, PTSD, things become fragmented because it's safer. It's safer if my body's over here freaking out, but I don't tie everything to it and I don't make it where, you know, I can't go to work or I can't go to school or I can't do life. So I'm going to have an upset stomach all day, but that's fine. That's just life, right? Rather than realizing, oh no, this is associated to this, and I need to do this work altogether to feel better as a whole person.
Mm-hmm. So all of this applies to us as a single wife, right?
Mm-hmm.
It also applies to our husband. He has mm-hmm. triggers too, whether yes. he has autism or reactive attachment, traumatic brain injury, whatever. He still has his story and his own set of triggers.
Yes, and that can be we get into this battleground, right? Of whose triggers are bigger or more important, right? I don't want you to say that. Well, you know, it triggers me when you say that. And it can be so stinking difficult, particularly with things like autism or reactive attachment disorder or TBIs or, you know, any of those things. It can be really challenging because you can be so stuck in that spot. And we're trying to really work on this idea of relational safety and relational connectivity. But when we're both triggered and we're both emotionally dysregulated, neither party is safe, right? And so we're trying to get to a place of I'm in better control of my triggers and what I need for my own personal emotional regulation. I have no control of this person over here. That is their responsibility. But I'm in control enough of mine to say when I need to take a break. Or when, you know, you do something like this, it really hurts me. Can we find a compromise on how we handle that situation? I'm capable of doing those things, whether my partner agrees to it or not. That's what's in my control. But now I have to also rely on this other partner that I'm supposed to be yoked with, right? And they're doing the same type of work as me and hoping that they have awareness of their triggers and they're articulating that and they understand the depth of that. And they're wanting to come alongside me in that and not just explain it and make it this thing that I have to respond to. And I'm emotionally responsible for their triggers. But this thing of like, I want to be responsible for my triggers and one partner. Other partner, I want to be responsible for my triggers too. How do we do relationship together?
Right. And that sounds great when it happens as far as each person taking personal responsibility for their own triggers. The focus, though, of our work is when he won't take responsibility for that. So, you know, I know you just kind of went over a little bit of what you do, but really, what do? You know, he
And the
w
other person won't.
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, sister. It's so tough. And that's where we have to get better at identifying, first off, what have been my self-protective tendencies within this relationship. So if I'm in a relationship with somebody who is kind of dominating with their own triggers and kind of dictating a certain response to that, what have been my self-protective tendencies? This is where we're going to see people pleasing. This is where we're going to see you becoming invisible and silent because the other person's emotions are much bigger. This is where we're going to see some of that codependent behavior where I'm going to ignore the rest of the world and I'm only going to focus my attention on this person. And why? Because I want to keep the environment as peaceful as possible. You know, people want as peaceful of an environment as possible. They want to be loved, they want to be cared for, and they want to have peace. But I can only achieve that if I'm managing this person's emotions and responses to things. So I'm not going to tell them about the big bill that came in. I'm going to find a way to take care of that. I'm not going to tell them about the thing that happened at school with our kids today. I'm just going to take care of that. I'm going to make sure that dinner's ready. And when he gets angry that it's not the right thing, I'm going to cook the next thing. And it's this loss of yourself and your autonomy and your identity. And that's a really hard place for you to be able to identify. What are my triggers? What are my emotions? You lose all of that when you prioritize this other person. So it comes down to you choosing for yourself in a relationship like this to not disappear, to not be absent, to not just give all of yourself to this other person. And that's going to mean boundaries. And that's going to be really hard because this person's not going to like that. This person may be angry or ignoring that. And you're in this position of what do I do when that happens? What do I do when I no longer take responsibility for what is their responsibility?
Yeah, it kind of relates then to safety, like you mentioned before. I've heard it said that in relationships, we all want intimacy, whether physical, spiritual, emotional, whatever. We want intimacy, but we can't start there. We have this base of safety, because when things are safe, then we begin to open up and act more like ourselves. And then, as we do that, as we share that openness, then intimacy comes in whatever form, right? But we've got to zero in on creating that safety. And that's not always easy in these kind of relationships. Sometimes it's not even possible.
Right. And I think it's interesting, correct me if I'm wrong or if you think differently on this, Wendy, but it's interesting because I find a lot of times in the beginning of these relationships, that's the very thing that happens, is it all starts with this idea of intimacy. Whether you have somebody who's autistic or again, an attachment disorder, TBI, or, you know, some sort of disorder like that, there's this love bombing. There's this over-attention on this person and this, like, I think of nothing but you and all of the time, and our interests are the same, and you're the greatest thing ever, right? And so it starts from this place of intimacy, and this wife is like, feeling bamboozled when, you know, 3 years into it, like, what happened? You know, they used to ask about my day and they used to care about this and they used to have this interest and now it's all different. And so, really educating yourself on, you know, if there is some sort of disorder like this in the relationship, educate yourself on what that means. If there's Asperger's present or autism present or, you know, any of those diagnoses that have come to fruition, ask. Dive into and educate yourself with what does that actually mean relationally? So not just what does the textbook tell me, right? But what does that mean within a relationship? And no, that doesn't mean we can go back and fix the past. And I started with intimacy and now I don't have any intimacy and I'm really sad, right? But we get confused with thinking this person is capable of intimacy because we had it in the beginning. And that doesn't always match up. So as you educate yourself with some of these disorders and figure out what it actually means relationally, now we start to understand what are the capabilities. Because we are trying to weigh what's the willingness and what's the capabilities. And if we have willingness and we have capabilities, we can make progress. Problem comes into play when we don't have willingness or we don't have capabilities. And that's where we end up in this really lonely spot where so many women are, and they just stay hopeful. I'm hopeful this will one day change. I'm hopeful he'll one day want me. I'm hopeful I can fix this enough and it will be different. I'm hopeful God will change his heart. God is capable, but he has to have a will to follow God's will to do that.
So true. I think that topic alone deserves a whole episode of its own, even. When safety is not possible, or when willingness is there, but capacity is not, or capability is not there, or any combination of those. Let's plan on an episode on that topic.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Anything else about triggers that would be pertinent to the conversation?
I think I think that you know, really kind of pushing this idea of educating yourself so that you can better understand some of these things where your partner may not be equipped to articulate some of those triggers, or to even identify those triggers within themselves. But as you educate yourself on a disorder, and you know, I don't recommend anybody self-diagnose out there, but you know, trying to get some good valuable feedback from a professional. But as you get more information on something that's potential in your relationship, and as you educate yourself, that really does empower you to kind of look at, okay, this communication style is more effective. Is that something that, you know, I'm willing and capable of doing? Yes. Okay. That makes our communication much better. Then we can reach compromise a little bit better. Or realizing, like, I am talking way too fast for this person, and I am using way too many words for this person, and they are getting irritable because their brain is wired to be sensitive to that. Is that something I can adjust and be mindful of? Yes. Okay. So again, not trying to say be responsible for this person's triggers, right? But be educated. Just like if your child has something going on, right? My daughter has dyslexia. I'm going to become an educated parent on that. So I know how to advocate for her. So I know how to have reasonable expectations for her. So I am equipped on what I can expect relationally. I think that really helps in the way of triggers as well.
And I think going back to what was said, that triggers can really be over focused on.
Yes.
It's like back in the 50s, everything that was wrong in a person's life was slapped a label of schizophrenia, right? Everything was schizophrenia. And now it's bipolar, and triggers. I hear that term more and more. Sometimes honorably and correctly, and a lot of times as an excuse.
Yes.
It's kind of the buzzword of the day.
Right. And it's frustrating because I feel like it does such a disservice to when it's an actual issue, right? And when we overgeneralize these things and we look at these things and as an excuse, somebody who's legitimately dealing with that, people want to just say, oh, you're autistic. Oh, you're autistic. Oh, you're autistic. But somebody who's actually married to an autistic is like, you don't get how hard that is, right? That's so frustrating and it's so lonely and you're just throwing that out there in this nonchalant way. That's difficult. And so yeah, I think we have to be responsible, not only with ourselves not to use triggers as an excuse nor as a way to insert inappropriate boundaries, but also we have to be responsible to be mindful of when I use this, I know what it actually means and I know what it does to me personally, and how that's impacting my relationships around me.
And the goal, honestly, is healing for ourselves,
Yes.
right? Yes, we're concerned about the relationship, but we have very little power, well, we have influence, but very little power to change our spouse. But we can change ourselves. We can work
Yes.
on our triggers. We can find healing for them and learn how to emotionally manage them rather than becoming reactive or avoidant. We learn to take care of ourselves, and then we show up better in the relationship. So we're doing it not selfishly, but
Right.
for ourselves.
Yes. Yeah, and I think that's, in most of what we talk about, which can be difficult for people because I think they want to come here and they want like, okay, you're gonna fix my marriage. You get it, you understand, you're gonna fix things, right? No, we're here to support you. We're here to encourage you and not one way or the other with your relationship, particularly, but in your own journey, in your own healing, because that is what you have authority over. That's what you have control with. And that is, your journey with God is how you're handling the situation for yourself. And you can't control this other person, right? You can manage yourself within a relationship. You cannot manage the outcome of the relationship.
Right. And that is what pleases God.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
We've been taught that, oh, we have to be codependent. We have to, always focus on the other person's needs. We have to focus on changing them and being a good little wife. And that's not what pleases God in a relationship.
No. No, I think it's so pleasing to God and He delights in us when we appreciate His creation, us. When we can see the truth about ourselves and when we're kind to ourselves and when we're loving to ourselves and when we are appreciative of His good work and His creation of us. And that doesn't mean just allowing, for emotional abuse, neglect, abandonment, those types of things, but realizing, you know what? I have a good God who designed me for something really precious. And His desire isn't for me to just, okay, I guess I'll go along with that. Okay, I'm really, that's fine. He wants us to stand up for His creation.
We often complain that nobody sees us, nobody knows us, and yet we choose to live our lives invisible,
Yes.
right? So it's like, how do people see us if we're always meek and mild and gone, really?
Right. Meek, mild, overly accommodating, silent, all of those things, right? Again, the self-protective tendencies within these kinds of relationships. And I doubt that anybody in a marriage like this, that this is their first relationship like this. I'm sure that there have been patterns throughout, other parts of their life, that's kind of come to this place. But yes, it's when we say, and this isn't to beat up on anybody. I'm totally guilty of this myself, but we say, gosh darn, like I wish somebody would acknowledge that, or gosh darn, I wish somebody saw that, or you know, those kinds of things. But it's like, do I give anybody permission to? Do I let myself be known? And really, it starts with you. It doesn't just start with, well, God knows me and God's right beside me. That's true. But do you see you? Do you see God's truth in you? Do you acknowledge that? Or do you minimize that? Do you justify that? Do you excuse that? The very thing that you're finding offense to, that your partner's doing to you, are you doing that to yourself?
Right. And we kind of say, oh, God's right beside me. God's right beside me. But what is he doing there? Right? He's not... Yeah. Standing there going, yay, you're invisible. I'm so proud of you. You know,
right. Yeah.
He's calling us out.
Yes.
Everything he created us to be.
Yes, everything. And we have a responsibility. We have a responsibility to go after that, to be what he's called us to be, to follow him in that. Faith is not this standstill. I'm going to stand in the quicksand and I'm just going to wait for you to rescue me. You have to be an active participant in your faith, and you have to choose to go after what he says for you. And this isn't what Terry and Wendy are saying. Like, this is the word. This is what God has made evident that he says for all of us, right? And, you know, God doesn't love Wendy any more than he loves Terry. So why am I loving Terry far less than I'm loving Wendy? That's foolishness on my part.
Right.
And I'm keeping myself in a spot that's not loving.
And that allows triggers to happen more often, to not be addressed, to be used as avoidance, conflict avoidance. I mean, all of those things. When we're avoiding, when we're not stepping into what God has for us, we're allowing the build, whatever triggers to do whatever triggers do. We're not attempting to find the healing, which is part of what God's called us to do.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like saying, and I've done this a large part of my life, like I'm tougher than that experience that I had, or I'm stronger and I'm fine. And I don't need to worry about that. I don't need to deal with that. Right. What am I doing? I'm leaving myself exposed as an open wound. Well, the enemy knows that vulnerability. The enemy sees that and is totally going to use that against me in every aspect of my life. And so I'm going to be really sad in a relationship because I'm not caring for myself. I'm not dressing that wound. I'm not allowing God to care for that because I think I'm stronger. I think I'm tougher. I've got this pride about me that I can do it just fine. Don't need to work on that, right? And that's a hard place to be because, you know, generally speaking, we're talking to lovely women. We're talking to soft, very nurturing, very caring women. And to hear like, oh, well, geez, maybe I have a little bit of a pride issue. That's a tough pill to swallow, right? But there is some truth to that, that if you are neglecting yourself in hope that this partner will come along and see that and wrap you up and love on you and cherish you, but you're not willing to do that for yourself, it's going to be a really lonely road.
Right. It's also fooling yourself.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
In a lot of ways, it's tricking yourself into believing that something that may or may not be true.
Right.
And in a lot of situations is just not true.
Exactly. And it's leading to unfair expectations, whether my partner is healthy or not. Right. It's an unfair expectation that they're going to be my savior. I have one savior. One. That is it. And I cannot depend or expect a person here on earth to do that for me. I am responsible for that. I am responsible for my mental health. I am responsible for my triggers. And this is the very thing that I would be asking of your spouse. You are responsible for your mental health. You are responsible for your triggers and your relational approach. So are you. So are you.
Right, right. And I think you just summed up the entire conversation. I have one savior. I am responsible for my mental health. And he is responsible for his mental health,
right.
our spouse, that is. So, yeah, we have one savior who can deal with us without his own personal triggers. All right, then we'll wrap up this session where we've talked about triggers, and hope you'll join us next time.
Thank you for connecting with us for another week. Please continue to check out our resources on our website at singlewives.org and also on our social media platforms.
If you find the podcast to be helpful, please share it with others who are also looking for a community. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. Until next week.